Om Shanti, and good evening to all of you. Welcome to this program. And of course, a very warm welcome to Sister Wadi, who you already know, and especially Sister Denise, who is joining us this evening. For those of you who don't know Sister Denise, she was the first Western BK. And she had the privilege of coming to Madhuban in the early years and taking the benefit of that in that there were no English speakers and she had to learn Hindi. And as a result, we take enormous benefit from Sister Denise because she really enriches Gyan through her very deep understanding of Hindi, which sometimes isn't translated quite adequately to give us a deeper sense of the meaning of the words. She's an educator. She's been involved in many aspects of our literature. She is part of Godlywood Studios and really she enables a very deep understanding of knowledge. So if you do want to follow Sister Denise, you can on SoundCloud. And she is now giving us Muli notes. If anyone's interested, they can come to me and be added to those Muli notes. It's very valuable to have this. So welcome to Sister Denise. Thank you for joining us. And yes.
Thank you. And I can welcome you too, Denise Ben. That's a very impressive resume.
Thank you.
And I can't imagine that there's anyone here who does not know Sister Denise, whether meeting her personally, having her come to your place, or having listened to her classes or her webcasts or seen her videos on the Gita and all related topics. It's very nice. Today's topic, going on from yesterday, and we know that the overall theme is the eternal mantras, and so Maria Jibhav. It's very nice sitting here because right at the back of this hall there's a huge image of Lakshmi and Narayan, which is combined, I guess, the aim and objective. And so to start, as we did last night, getting a sense of the actual literal meaning of the word and the interpretation thereof from Denise.
Well, as Shuna mentioned, I really go into the words and I pull them apart and investigate. And recently I found a translation of the word bhav, which also included perception. So I thought, this is great because I can work with this. So using the term perception to refer to bhav, do I check all the dictionaries, right? A madhyaji means the one in the middle. And that refers to the Trimurti, so Brahma, Vishnu, and Shankar. So Vishnu is the one in the middle. So it's about being able to perceive Vishnu. And you perceive, Vishnu doesn't exist as an individual. Mm-hmm. Vishnu is a symbol. So then I would say it means, can I perceive what that symbol represents? In my churnings on the Trimurti, Brahma, all of us are Brahmas, all of us have a Vishnu eventually, and all of us do the work of Shankar, who represents the bodiless stage and who represents tapasya, yoga. So as Brahma, there is simplicity, a life of simplicity, a life of study and discipline. So Brahma means you add things to yourself. So there's a plus. To me, Shankar is your minus.
Minus. Mm. Interesting.
So Vishnu is the zero in between plus and minus. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So zero is also a symbol of perfection. It's also a symbol of God. And we have to reach Vishnu, which is a symbol of androgyny.
Mm-hmm.
So it's balance between the masculine and the feminine. And my idea about soul consciousness is we're genderless, colorless, cultureless, raceless, you know, and I'm just a being. And perceiving the one in the middle means perceiving the final consequences of the effort that we make in the confluence age. And I think one of the barriers we have is the iconography. And one time I had a vision of Krishna. And that was a long, long time ago.
That was right at the beginning, even before Gyan, right?
No, that was after Gyan.
Yeah.
It was during Bhog one day. And I saw the form of Krishna talking to the trance messenger, who was Mohini Ben from New York. And, you know, this Krishna was incredibly beautiful, you know, and our art is very simple, very basic. It's like diagrams rather than art, really. And I tried to represent this, and I found that the material out of which Krishna was made, matter, was so totally different from the matter of now, that it's not possible to represent. So, to me, perception in this way, or using the divine intellect, means that we have to really get strongly beyond all the representations that we have in order to arrive at what Baba's really talking about. So, a visionary experience like this gives you a big leap from something very simple, basic of this time to what is there. And then I had another vision when I was about 18, and I saw myself as a deity. And when I was 18, I was not remotely connected with, I was connected with India, because I used to listen to Indian music, burn incense, and do all the things that one did in those days. But it was very surprising for me to see myself. I didn't have a very high self-esteem in those days. I was very questioning. And then seeing myself as a deity, and I didn't see it as an Indian deity, but definitely a deity and an extraordinary person, you know. So this huge gap between what we have become after 84 births and where we're going is so vast that it's unimaginable to cross that gap. It's like trying to fly to the sun. Okay, we flew to the moon, which was big enough, but fly to the sun, out of the question, you'd burn up, you know. But these sort of experiences shifted my ideas about perception. And then when I came up this alternative word for bhav as perception, it really started me thinking, and I found it very good.
Right, because traditionally it would be seen more as like a blessing, no? Bhav. May you be, or whatever.
Yeah.
And
right.
So that's an interesting, very interesting dimension. It opens it way up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it opened up a lot for me.
Just in looking at Lakshmi Narayan, and what makes Lakshmi Lakshmi and Narayan Narayan? Why is one Narayan and one Lakshmi?
Well, we're talking about a kingdom, so we have an emperor and an empress. This is the household path, so we have men and women, but they're complementary. I think the problem with the world we've grown up in and the world of India very much is it's a patriarchal world, it's biased, and people don't really see themselves as genderless. You know, when you think, okay, I've had 42 births as a man and 42 births as a woman, and we all have, so what are you? You can't say you're neither. You have to say you're both. And to me, Vishnu is about balancing. Obviously, one is influenced by one's body.
Of course.
And I was the first child in the family, so you have to be a boy. If you're not a boy, that's, forget it.
Disappointment.
That's failure. So I've always been quite masculine in my mentality. I didn't really like all the feminine stuff that would get put on you as a child, and so I would reject all that. You know, I would be wearing trousers and climbing trees, and with my two brothers, I was all the Indians and they were two cowboys, this sort of thing. So I've liked the idea of being both and neither. You know, because also in the golden age, nobody's conscious of you're a male or you're a female. It's a kind of an automatic, hardly noticed thing. There are protocols. I think the golden age is quite a formal procedure, but it's also like a ballet. So you dance and everything is automatic and intensely beautiful and soft. I don't speculate that much about the golden age, because when I hear people speculating about it, I never agree. So, because it's more subtle than we can really think.
I think so too, and it was a question from a while ago. Are we know we're not God conscious in the golden age, but are we soul conscious? And the answer that came from someone that really resonated with me is, we think we're omnipresent.
Well, that's an interesting idea.
Yes. Yeah, really, because there's no barriers or borders to your consciousness. And so you and so the whole consciousness is of, even in matter, is of the original qualities, and so there's no separation anywhere, and so
yeah,
it feels like you're
omnipresent. We definitely are aware of being permanent, and we definitely know that, you know, I leave this body, so I am not this body is well known, so we wear a body just as we would wear clothing. We're very subtle. We operate by telepathy.
By telepathy, yeah. So the consciousness, yeah, it's almost like the body's almost a formality. And then thinking of that, how later on in bhakti there is the worship of matter, what will be our interaction or consciousness of matter in the kingdom?
Well, I have also seen the elementals.
Okay, that means you'll have to describe what you mean.
Yeah, I'm not crazy, but I have seen these things. And
do you mean fairies?
Fairies, no. The spirit of a mountain, the spirit of a river, these kinds of things.
Okay.
So in bhakti, they do make personifications of rivers like the Ganga and Saraswati and all of this. But I'm very sensitive to those things. And I think that in the golden age, everybody's very sensitive that the earth is no less alive than we are.
Right, right.
I also experienced one time that there's really no difference at all whether you're alive or dead.
So it's almost, it is still that... idea, maybe it's where it came from, of oneness. It may not be in their consciousness, but it's the experience that everything is all one. There's no,
you're connected.
Yeah.
I don't think people use the term oneness.
No, they won't, of course not.
It's definitely connected, definitely part of, and I think that no separation, no difference, and you are your essentiality and everyone else's too, and not only that, but it's high tech, which is kind of interesting, right? It's a high tech world.
Of course, yeah.
You know, so definitely you and your people and your animals and everything is all connected, in contact with each other. I mean, talking to animals is totally normal in the Golden Age. It's normal over here as well. Most people don't have that connectedness. I think when your soul consciousness is very subtle, you're very connected, you know.
It won't even be about talking. It'll just be a communication.
Yeah. You don't really need to talk.
Yeah.
There's nothing to say, really.
It's almost like you can inhabit. I would assume that you could inhabit, whether it's the mountain or the lion or whatever, that you could be in that experience, even when maybe we're getting too far away here. No.
I don't know.
Oh dear, oh dear.
Are we too far away? No. I mean, the Golden Age is pretty different from the Iron Age.
I think so too. I think we can hardly, barely conceive of it.
So bringing us back to the here and now.
Okay, let's do that. What about, because Baba gives us Mariaji Bhav as an aim and objective, right? So the other aim and objective that we have is that of being Bapsaman. So how do you connect those two things?
Well, Baba in his perfect form is the angel.
Okay.
Abhyakt Baba.
Okay.
You know, and from the angle of Bhakti, Brahma Baba is a deity at this time in the Abhyat form, so that means perfect. So that means he's operating anytime, any place. He can do whatever he wants. He doesn't have any limitations. He knows whatever we're doing, whatever we're thinking, whatever we're going through, and he is evaluating us. That's his function. He's helping us. He's doing all sorts of things, but he doesn't tell us about. But he is without any limits. And I think that if we want to be Bapsaman, then we're trying to be like that too, which is a pre-Golden Age state. So we're still in that very subtle kind of consciousness where you're one with everything. I don't know about oneness, it's not my cup of tea, that word, but one with everything is definitely something that I resonate with. And you see, karmatit is a very good word, because karmatit means that there isn't anything that brings you down. And the experiences that I've been having in the last little while from Baba is just go up, 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 up. Keep going up, 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 don't come down. Because there's nothing down here that is useful for developing that kind of Bapsaman consciousness. So the angelic, if you look at the five forms,
right,
all of them are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Your deity form, well, that's Vishnu, you can say Madhyaji Bhav. Your angelic form is Bapsaman. The worship-worthy form I find quite interesting, because most people, when they make the pictures of it, they give you a Ganesh or something like this, but no. Picture of Ganesh.
Ah, okay.
Have you seen those? There's lots of different BKs make different pictures. But anyway, to me, the worship-worthy form is, okay, there's an idol. There was a reference to it in the Murli earlier today. once you have a statue and you put that statue in a temple, then you bring the spirit of that deity into that statue. And this is your worship-worthy form. So that spirit that you can have access to in the Copper Age and keep going during your bhakti, that's the same as your spirit of your deity form, is the same as the spirit of your avyakt form, is the same as the seed soul that you are in the soul, and you come down, your ancient, your original, and your final form that's also there. And then, you know, perfect Brahman, as soon as you become a perfect Brahman, you come into your avyakt form. So to me, they're all three different versions of the perfect stage.
Is there one that resonates in particular with you?
No, I think that if you have just one thing, there's a tendency to get rigid.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I like the rotating, mm-hmm. the spinning, because it's very focused. Sometimes I use an analogy of a bullet from a rifle. A rifle mm-hmm. is the grooves in the barrel of the gun, which causes the bullet to spin. And when we're spinning, then we can stay in one plane and we can shoot like very, very far.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about spinning the cycle of self-realization, this is also a spinning action. And it allows for stability. You see, it's like a gyroscope. And so when you spin these five forms, all of which are perfect, I think it's a very good way to take you to the feeling of what it's like to be there, and then go and be there, keep going up, keep going there, and that is a good practice. If you have the other one, the Swadarshan Chakra,
mm-hmm.
this acts on you differently, because you want to be honest, and you cannot say, I am a deity, because you're not. You can say, I am a warrior, because you're all the time fighting. You can say, I'm a merchant, because you're all the time trying to make a deal. You won't say, I'm a shudra, because it's just absolutely not for your ego. And, you know, where you have to accept your deity stage and pass beyond the present day idea of what's true and what's a lie. Because he says you are a deity soul, otherwise you couldn't come and study this. So you have to say, I am a deity, because you are. And you have to say, I'm a shudra, because you are. And this is a good way to chop off the pretense, you know, the ego, which says, I'm not that bad.
If it comes to any kind of focus on, say, again, as Baba tells us, that we're supposed to be giving visions, what would be your consciousness again? Would it be as simplistic as an angel or a deity or something? Probably a little more complex.
No, I think that when you can hook into that vibration,
mm-hmm. okay,
you know, if you get a vision of this sort of thing, there's a vibration that comes with it, and you can go there vibrationally. It's very, very harmonious. You know, harmony is a very key characteristic of the golden age. Mm-hmm. I think everything is in harmony.
Right.
And if you go into that state of consciousness, or you stay there as much as you can, and people will feel it. People can pick it up. You can anyway project yourself when you're doing that. There are many things Baba has told us to do to practice being that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you say, okay, be an angel, there's so much of a tendency to replicate some iron-aged icon, which is not the same vibration. You know, it's quite gross, it's quite down here.
Like, for example?
Like, we've got an angel up there, you know, it's pretty gross in comparison with an actual angel,
okay.
You know? So people will have a tendency to keep in their mind some icon, some picture, which belongs to the Iron Age, okay, Confluence Age, but it's this vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that vibration is so different. It's so subtle. it's like a beautiful note on a violin, you know, which only certain players can actually hit, you know, and then it takes you sort of out of this dimension
realm
of grossness, you know, to something else.
I think this was a question from one of the team members. What is your memorial in the cycle?
Oh, I don't really know. I mean, it'd be awfully nice to be one of those people in Dilvara Temple.
Really?
Well, yeah, I like them.
So you would see it as something very particular in terms of the confluence age, in other words?
Well, I was recently in China with Sister Chen, and she took me to a Buddhist temple. And the Buddha had 18 friends who were with him. And she said that there is the belief that if you can resonate with one of them, that's your kind of memorial. So I resonated with one of them who was like a scholarly type. So I think of myself as hopefully some sort of scholarly type over there. I don't know what's my memorial.
Okay, well, you would traditionally, and this is getting personal, you would traditionally be seen as a scholarly type, and you are, and that you have a very developed intellect, which I think you came to Baba with. And then,
yeah, this is thanks to Daddy Janki.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You know, she taught me how to link to her mind, you know, so that I could know what she's saying. That's how I could translate, you know. You don't hear what she says and then put it into English, no.
No.
You hear what she means and then say that. Even sometimes I will say something, I don't even know what I'm saying. It's coming out. So, something like that. And, you know, Baba says, I'm the supreme soul, and I'm talking to souls, and everybody else is talking to bodies. So it's like, what is that? This is something different. And when you talk to somebody as a soul, you're talking to something eternal, not something temporary. You're talking to not the current person, but who the person is independently of the present time. I would say that Baba knows us independently of our current incarnation, and he knows us in all of our incarnations. You know, he says, for Brahma Baba, I know all of his incarnations, and he knows all of our incarnations. So there's some continuity. Well, it's like a spectrum all the way from the most perfect you, Vishnu, to the most imperfect you, which is the one who is spiritually depleted and corrupted, you know. And so so that's why I'm not in favor of things like values. I don't agree with them. I like more virtues, because virtues come from God and power, and the eight powers. Because values come from people, and they vary enormously. But if you want to, I think, become what he's offering us to become, which is really the Vishnu is the representation of that, then you have to think of yourself so differently from what it looks like in the mirror, or maybe what your CV says, or, you know, so it's a bit paradoxical, and maybe it's a bit schizophrenic, because you have to be beyond what you seem to be, while at the same time operating as a normal basic human, you know, and parallel, and then you have a big stretch, I think, between your normal everyday self and then what Baba's talking to us about. And I like better to do it as a vibration.
That's nice, yeah.
You know, because otherwise it's a bit crazy.
So he, you know, in using these two mantras, it's traditionally seen as remember me, be mindful, and remember the inheritance. And so what does it mean to have yoga with the inheritance?
Well, the inheritance to me is, okay, a son will get the inheritance from the father or the grandfather. So whatever is the property of God, I have a right to it. And it's not like physical, movable or non-movable property, but it's wisdom, its qualities, its state of being, you know. And what he is saying is, you can be like me, you can perceive the world the way I perceive the world, and you can come and look at it from the same angle as I look at it, and see yourself as I see you, and you have to honor that. You know, there's so many people, they have a doubt that, you know, it's not possible for me to be that. It's a nice idea, but they don't take it seriously, you know what I mean?
But one other side of it sometimes is that one can have a very clear image, vision, no doubt, but those in my connection have a doubt.
That's also
about,
true.
About me, or...
Well, also because your state
and so how
fluctuates.
Do you, how do you... manage that?
I think you have to have your basic normal self as one kind of self. Then you have to have your perfect self as a different self.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have your effort-making self, which is going up and down, as a different self.
Mm-hmm.
And the this is a becoming, and what you are is what you started off as, and what you're going to become is what you're going to end up as. And identify with that, that I am going there. And that's that, you know.
Even if nobody else sort of sees it, do I need others to see it?
Well, I think...
Or is there ever any frustration, if you like, when one has a clarity, you know, about perhaps who one is, or what they're doing, what they're about, and yet there seems to be pushback from others. How do I negotiate that? How do I...
Well, I think also it's connected with this idea of giving a vision. You can sometimes, at least in my relationship with my circle of people, every so often I will get a glimpse of who they really are, and they will get a glimpse of who I really am.
Okay.
And it may or may not be communicated. But I think, at least in my circle of people, they all have the possibility of perceiving that which is not here now, through intuition and maybe divine insight, or however you want to call it.
And also maybe even just generally speaking, growing up in terms of Gyan and one's own truth,
yeah,
and the perception,
yeah, yeah,
of what's
because,
going
you see,
on for others.
We have to be very solid and grounded, and we also have to have these other capacities, which are really capacities of the mind, which people can kind of pick up, or you can sort of project somehow, and people feel it. But still, I think they will relate to your current solid performance of the present time, you know, and they will see you as that.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes also it's like a suspicion that, yeah, maybe it's possible. And also, among all of us who know each other for a long, long time, we think of ourselves as knowing each other forever.
Yes.
And as being in this or that relationship in some format or another, because we're like friends,
mm-hmm,
and also friends of Baba, going through the cycle, and that's good enough for us, right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Baba has so much power that he can endure human suffering without getting upset by it.
Of course.
I think we also have to be able to do that, because human suffering is so tragic and so terrible, but the nature of the drama is you have to be able to span this very, very large spectrum from extreme hell to total heaven.
Maybe this is one of those things where, you know, and again with that image of Mariaji Bhav representing balance, where to be able to be like that, unaffected, and at the same time compassionate.
Yes,
and so
yes.
How do you reconcile those two things? Because sometimes I can use one wrongly and kind of negate my compassion by saying, karma, drama.
Yeah, and it's very easy to do that,
easy
and that's very unspiritual.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to understand that things happen to people partly because of karma and partly because of drama. And what
mm-hmm.
we need to do is to see the soul, because the soul is not the role. And
yeah.
even though the soul goes through all those things, but that is just a temporary thing. It's like when Baba says to us, see virtues, you know, and the virtues are quite hidden. If you see with the third eye, you can see the virtues. If you see normally, you see what's wrong with everybody. And he says, that's too obvious, you know, what's so great about that? Anybody can see that. See the hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And then also see the potential of a
mm-hmm.
person.
Mm-hmm. Even
and
if they're not recognizing it themselves.
Definitely. And then when people are going through suffering or war, you know, there is nothing you can do about it. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing you can do to alleviate it. Nothing. So Baba has said sometimes give vibrations, because you're bringing maybe those souls to that dimension where you feel the harmony. And the events of the war or the illness or something like this is down, and you are up, you know, in a different space. Maybe that's a good way.
Mm. And anything else you want to add to that idea of, because I'm sure is there such a thing as perfect balance? Perhaps not.
Yeah, no, there has to be such a thing as perfect balance, and the spinning of the cycle is the symbol of that, and the Vishnu is a symbol of perfect balance. We have many symbols of perfect
right.
balance, but
practically
balance
speaking,
is all the time moving.
Yes.
And so it's not rigid.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite easy for people to become rigid in lots of ways, but I think that if you think of balance as a moving thing, as perfection is a balanced thing, harmony is a vibration, it's not fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's nice for us to be able to go sort of in and out of that harmony and move around it.
Right, almost to check it sometimes and come back again. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely. I mean, we appreciate things by
evaluate.
The contrast.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In the Golden Age, nobody knows they're all going to hell. It's terrible.
Mm.
We can handle the knowledge because we've already been in hell. Thank you very much. But very nice. Now we're going somewhere else.
Mm. So, what else? We've spoken about the elements. Daddy mentioned yesterday or the day before, she says, nobody can use their intellect in front of Buddhiwan. You know, can we aspire to that? Can we aspire to having the same kind of intellect as Baba?
Well, I think that if we study, he always tells us to study.
Mm.
When we study and you turn the knowledge, it's like the whole Murli is in code, and you turn it, you're figuring out what's behind it and what's beneath it, and you crack the code and you get into a mentality. So Baba, you know, helps us to get into that mentality, which we can hold for a moment or two. But I think that, you know, Baba is like that all the time. He's totally clear all the time. And we can get glimpses of
yeah,
it,
glimpses,
you know.
Yeah, glimpses.
And that is what a human can do. I mean, most humans can't come anywhere near that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Baba has made it possible for us to see ourselves, for us to see him, which is extraordinary. And then we say, okay, then what does it mean? It means that we have to be able to somehow, like some sort of a moon, reflect it to other people, because he's given us this not just for us, but because he wants us to do something for everybody. And then it's up to us how we feel that we can do that or should do that. So I think the closer you can get to Baba, the closer you are to Matyaji Bhav. So Manmana Bhav, to me, I will translate that to myself as perceive the mind of God with your mind. And your mind has to be very still and very steady, because it's always going off here and there. But hold it very steady, deep silence, with your mind, perceive his mind, then you're somewhere else, a whole different dimension. And that vibration or harmony corresponds with the Matyaji Bhav to me. That's how I think about it.
Okay, not following on from that, just the thought suddenly came, we all know that Manmana Bhav is referenced in the Gita. Where did Matyaji Bhav come from?
Well, it's in the Gita too.
Is it also in the Gita?
Yeah.
In what context?
Well, you know, I'm doing a whole thing in the Gita.
I do indeed.
And
yes.
I'm focusing
That's why
on
I'm
the
asking.
Second chapter. But it is in there. The Gita is very complicated and problematic, because it's obviously written by lots of different people and with lots of different ideas in it. But in there, there are those two mantras, but they're not explained. And I can't remember chapter and verse, but they are in there further towards
the
end
of the Gita.
Well,
the first one is kind of self-explanatory, you know, in that many people just say, yes, the idea of you know, be mine with your mind, turn your mind towards me.
Well,
but
that's
the second
case.
One? But I think, wouldn't that be generally understood that that's what God is saying?
No.
Be absorbed
no.
in me.
People
no?
don't understand that.
No?
No. You know, when I started doing this work, people said to me, you're not permitted to do this. I said, why? They said, well, you don't understand Sanskrit. I said, yeah, but I know what it means. And the other people who study the Gita, they know the words, but they don't know what they mean. And because of the Murli, because of all the study we did with Dadi in former years, we know them what it means, and so we can process the meaning and then talk about it. And so this is why I decided to do this, but I limited myself to the second chapter because it's so enormous. I mean, it's a small book, but it's so big. It's like opening up the ocean, you can drown. So you have to start with a little bit and then go on. And then you have to see it, how different people interpret it, what they think about it, what they think it means. And it's enormously different from what Baba has explained. So to me, what we have is a treasure that is light years greater than any of the stuff that these people like Eckhart Tolle and Deepak Chopra and all those people, they have like little
they
peanuts.
They take a little piece and they write a whole book on it.
Yeah.
Which
we
was
have
a throwaway
this whole
line
thing.
From Baba.
Yeah. We have this whole thing. I'm trying to make it so you can study it maybe more easily, go more deep, maybe.
So can you tell me where, because I'm not aware of this word Matyaji Bhav and where it appears in the Gita?
Well, I can't remember exactly where it is, but I was looking out for it and I did encounter it.
In the Gita, how it's understood.
Because, you see, they don't make any difference between Krishna, Vishnu, God and omnipresence. It's all one thing, you see.
Does the idea of the Trinity appear there or not?
No.
Not really?
No.
No. Okay. Let's see.
You know, fortunately we have 84 lives, otherwise you can't study the Indian scriptures, they're too much. You can do the Bible, you can do the Quran, it's small, but the Indian is too big. It's huge, you know.
So where do you, just doing a kind of an assessment of, not of yourself specifically, but of the Brahman family now, in relation to these mantras, and in particular Madhyaji Bhav, and being the embodiment of that. And you've been with this for 45 years must be now, something like that.
Yeah.
Where do you see us as being at the present time? Do you feel we're becoming more the embodiment of that, or we're still very far away from it?
Well, I think we're very good at talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think, you know, it's quite difficult already to be soul conscious. And then it's quite difficult to be soul conscious and remember Baba in that state. And then not that many people really do the work of, I think, this system of spinning the five forms is a very good way to go to Madhyati Bhav.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think very many people do that because we're very busy.
Do you want to just elaborate? Because there may be people here who are here for the first time. The five forms may not have been, I mean, we've focused on that in years gone by.
Yeah, the five forms is the point, which is perfect, and the deity, mm-hmm. which is perfect, and the worship-worthy form, which is perfect, and the Brahman, which hopefully will become perfect sooner or later, and then the angel, which is a perfect form. So these are five different depictions of perfection, of which Vishnu is one, but all of them are the same, because they're all perfect, but they're perfect in different ways. Perfect from a different standpoint. And, you know, we tend to be perfectionist, which is pretty far away from perfect. And, you know, for something to be absolutely perfect, like a perfect photograph or a perfectly proportioned building or a perfect human body or any of these things, belongs to classic art. You know, or a perfect piece of music, or a perfect novel. You know, these are way out of the range of regular BKs, I think. So we do, within our own range, we work with what Baba tells us, and each and every one of us has our own perfect form.
Exactly.
And I think that by working with the Murali, we arrive there. And each and every BK meditates differently. None of us meditate the way we teach other people to meditate. Nobody does a meditation commentary for themselves, only for other people. It's a bit strange, but it's what happens.
Do you think so?
Oh, definitely. Do you?
I would. Well, the thing is, and I'm sure it's your experience too, as it must be many other people's, that you start, it may be in a public setting, where you're giving a meditation commentary. It's not something you've planned or written down or thought about. It's spontaneous. It comes out at that moment. And so, I mean, I feel that I'm in that experience. I'm in the enjoyment of it. I'm not so much thinking about the other
Definitely,
people.
But when we are doing that, it's like an offering. And we
mm-hmm.
definitely have a nice meditation experience.
Yeah.
But when I think of myself as meditating, I'm doing hard mental work. I'm trying to use the knowledge and really, really focus and use different points
mm-hmm.
to arrive. And I also meditate, like I'll take a point or two or three points that don't fit together and meditate with them, and my idea is you go full circle so that you have fully understood what it is you're thinking about. So to me, meditating is also cracking the code of what's the meaning behind those words.
Do you have an experience of, like, comparatively speaking, what would have been like a really high experience in meditation for you that wasn't to do with necessarily the utilization of your intellect to get you there, that it took you by surprise?
Well, those are Baba's gifts.
Yes,
you know?
So tell us about one.
Well, no, I think what I would prefer to tell you about is when you meditate and you try and you go on for hours and hours and weeks and months, you kind of go through some barriers.
Okay.
And when I get to a point where I'm totally unable to feel my body and I'm absolutely focused point of light and I'm connected with Baba, there is huge pulsations of power coming at me, and that can last for quite some time. And that, to me, is a good meditation.
So does the intellect ever get in the way of the meditation?
No, not for me, because I use the Murli, you see, and the Murli doesn't come from a human. And the intellectual is a human, but a divine intellect, or if you churn Baba's knowledge, you say he's God and he's got his ideas in his mind, in his intellect, and you work with them, you can go to where he is. And then the worldly people who call themselves intellectuals, they wouldn't do that. You remember Jagdish Bhai talked about body conscious and then intellectual consciousness and then spiritual consciousness, right? So intellectual consciousness is like mathematics and the scientific things, quantum physics and so on. But this is something else. And Baba has taken our brain or mind or soul or whatever and said, come here and talk to me here. And we say, yeah, that's good.
Have you always had a sense of, Sister Janti touched on this last night in Baba telling her when she was in front of Baba, you know what you have to do. Have you always been cognizant of what it is that you have to do as a Brahma Kumari, as Baba's child? And I don't just mean in the general, I mean specific. Because
yeah, very much so. And there's lots of resistance.
From?
From gross consciousness, from
interesting
matter, from...
Does fear ever get in the way?
Does
fear ever get in the way?
No, I'm not... maybe lazy, but not fearful.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
No, I think Baba makes you know what you have to do.
Yes.
You know, in the early days, we're in 7-7 most of the time. All of this clarity comes, you see. And then as time goes by, you have to push harder and harder. You know, Raja Yoga doesn't get easier with time. It gets more difficult. And many people come in, not many people stay. Because it's more difficult. And it's rather like, you know, Daddy Jenki tells us that Brahma Baba told her that if you want to catch up on having arrived 6 months late, you should read each Murli 12 times. So she decided to read it 24 times.
Right.
So I said, okay, I'm going to try that too. And I found that it's very easy to read it once, twice, three times, four times, but you keep going up till 20 times. It's heavy mental work. You require enormous muscle of the intellect to focus because the resistance comes more and more and more. But if you can do it, you are neutralizing that resistance. And I think that resistance is material consciousness or body consciousness or sin or whatever you want to call it, but there is a big resistance and we're all the time resisting that resistance. And that's why we have to do discipline. If we don't do discipline, we won't get through it.
So maybe just to wind up, in the same way that you have that awareness of what it is that Baba wants from you, and it's very specific. And in what you were saying earlier on, that everyone has their own perfection, right? Whatever it is, they all have their own. We all have our own perfection. We all have something specific that Baba wants from and for us, but sometimes people can find themselves lacking because they might compare themselves with somebody else. How or what yuktis would you suggest so that individuals come to know very clearly what they are here for, and that they're not just another cog in the wheel, but that there's something very specific that Baba has for them?
Yeah, I think as I don't really see myself as part of the machinery of the yagya, as in the sense of a cog in the wheel. But to me, the most important is to be right with myself, you see. And if I'm develop a relationship with another human being and I find that they're not right, they're not clean, I don't want it anymore. You know, so Baba's the only one who's totally clean. Dadi Prakashmani, totally clean. What you see is what you get. Somebody who has certain principle and they will not break it at any cost. You know, they absolutely right with the self. That's the expression I use, you know. I will not compromise my soul or sell my soul, because why? You don't have to.
So this is what you're suggesting for individuals. I'm pointing it here, of course, it extends beyond that. So that they can, that each one can come to know with great clarity about why Baba has, you know, to use the expression, chosen them.
Sometimes he says, don't compare yourself with other human. Compare yourself with Brahma Baba. You know, that because he's absolutely guaranteed clean, right, correct, pure, you see. And all of these performance that we do and roles and responsibilities and this and that is coming and going. This is a circumstance in which we can learn many things and take many exams and so on. But that's not why we come in Gyan. We come in Gyan so that we can make contact with Shiv Baba and hold it and understand him and understand ourselves. Everything else is like peripheral. You know, it's not possible for a person to do this in isolation because it's too hard.
Okay.
And it's very nice for us to do it together, and then there's a creation of a kingdom anyway that's happening. But behind all of that, why am I doing this, is to become true.
Mm-hmm.
And to be true and stay true. And because that is independent of everything.
There was the awareness a little while ago, and it was interesting because Sister Mohini had mentioned something similar that Didi had said, and this idea that, you know, all of us are individuals, unique individuals from all quarters and corners of the world and the whole plethora of human experience, but that we were all seeking and aspiring to and wanting something more, and it was almost like as if Baba seeing all these individuals now, at least a million of us, and he created the yagya, you know, just for me. He created the yagya just for you, so that we would have that kind of support, and that he could then massage us into becoming like him. But that awareness, just that Baba's acutely aware of each one of us as a unique individual, and that that energy of his love in drawing us into that sameness is always and ever available. Denise Ben, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
I'll be happy to go back and look at this. I really enjoyed the points. And everybody.
Thank you. Om Shanti.
Thank you so much. Om Shanti.
Okay.